are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUX webradio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Thursday edition. Yesterday, I did a lot of analysis and my commentary on the principles of President Trump's new tax plan. And I'll have more to say about that, but it's really, the principles are incomplete. There's a lot of detail that just simply is not there. You can't really fairly evaluate it until you have that. And the kind of joker is the fact that the president can propose anything he wants as a plan, but the Republicans have their own tax plan in the House. Now, hopefully, at some point, they get together. And I raise that because the House plan has the border adjustment tax, the BAT. Now, I'm not going to get into it because I think it should be thrown in the trash. Yet there is some indication that it's still not completely off the table. So we're getting some mixed signals here. Whose tax plan will the Republican Party go forward with? The House Republican plan or the President's plan? I don't know. And we probably will not have the specific details probably to after the summer recess. In other words, the fall. That's a little surprising. It's disappointing because had the transition team done their homework, they should have had the tax bill passed. Not in the first 100 days, but before the fall recess, and make it effective for this year. Instead, I don't know what really is the Trump tax plan. Principles are not enough. Specifics are required, and that was the problem during his candidacy. Not on all issues, but on many issues. The question was how? And I want to be fair here. Yes, I'm a lot clearer now as to what he's shooting for, but if he truly wants to get to 4-5-6% growth, it's not going to happen. Not with these principles, and not with the Republican Party, the established, having a major difference of opinion as to where to go. And let me put it in a nutshell, and then I'll move on to the second story that we didn't have time to go to and discuss yesterday, that happened yesterday, but it's still important today and probably will be important for the next coming weeks. In essence, Trump believes that his tax plan, once it's signed, sealed, and delivered, will give us economic growth. I agree with that. It will give you economic growth. I have no doubt about that. But will it be enough? That is the key question. And what they're saying is that growth will mean not only more tax revenues, but a lower deficit. That remains to be seen, because the deficit, for example, this fiscal year is headed for over $500 billion. There's no specifics, if there ever is going to be one. One, how is the president, what is he proposing to cut, not only in this year, but in 2018? I hear a lot of increases in defense, infrastructure, but not decreases. And I mean major ones. And because of that the House is saying, if you want your tax plan, you got to replace those revenues. And that's why they came up with this border adjustment tax. If they go forward with that, the American people will scream, holler, and it will not sit well with Trump supporters, or for that matter, the American people. They're scratching their head and saying, what the hell were you thinking? So I hope they put it in the trash. But if they do, then you get back to that question. It's a legitimate question. How are you going to pay for it? And yesterday I gave you my answer. Cut spending. In my mind, they're not capable of doing it. Either Congress definitely is not capable of doing, and I seriously doubt the White House. President Trump is. Because if you're not going to touch entitlements, defense spending, cutting a little here and there with the remaining departments doesn't get you very far. It gets back to that saying, why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. If you're going to cut spending, you have to look at entitlements and you have to look at welfare programs. And really, you have to look at defense too, by the way, even though I'm for defense increases, not to support an American empire. So there is some balancing that needs to be going on. If President Trump thinks his tax proposal will give him enough growth, I think he's sadly mistaken. And I think he's being misled. It's just, like I said, it's timid. It's timid. Tinkering. Trump's timid tinkering. It's not going to work because Trump's Achilles heel is government spending is out of control and he won't tackle it. And until such time as he tackles it, and that requires leadership, not followership, he'll never make America great again. He's just another big spending liberal Democrat rollover Republican. That's why both parties today are big government parties. Don't be fooled by the talk. I agree with Mr. Trump, President Trump. The time for talk is over. The time for talk was over many years ago. The time for action, bold action, is staring us in the face, and we're hearing more talk. More compromise, more talk. Who wins? The political establishment in Washington, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Who loses? The American people. The American people placed a bet on Donald Trump. He was an outsider. He was going to shake up Washington, D.C., drain the swamp. Well, I don't see much drainage. In fact, I don't see any drainage. But I'm willing to give Mr. Trump a full year because I think in the full year he will reveal whether or not he can go beyond talk and deliver some results. I mean meaningful results. And I'll touch upon, I'm not going to do the typical analysis of what did President Trump accomplish in 100 days, because I think 100 days is meaningless. It's meaningless. The American people, and here's where I 100% agree with Mr. Trump. They want job creation. They want a booming economy. And that's what it takes for job creation. He has to deliver on that campaign promise. And the economy is stagnating. Growth is at 2% or less. Friday, we'll get the advance estimate for the first quarter as well as the revised estimate for the last quarter. It'll be definitely be under 2%. The question is, will it be under 1%? I don't know. We'll find out shortly, though. And to be fair to Mr. Trump, that's on President Obama. Obviously, the last quarter is as well as the first quarter. Presidents have about 6 months to get their act together, and then it's his responsibility. So the first and second quarter of this year, those are Obama quarters, just like the first and second quarter of the Obama administration were George Bush's quarter. But after the president has 6 months in office, more than 100 days, he has to show results. So I'm not going to panic if the first and second quarter are low in terms of the real growth in gross domestic product, GDP. And I expect them to be low. I just don't know how low. Somewhere between 0 and 2%. And I think it'll hover around 1%. But we'll find out. And remember, and this is important, that first estimate is not reliable. I don't care if it's low or high. It is subject to major change because they're going to get more information. So it's really the end of May where we'll know fairly realistically what the first quarter was and solidly in terms of the last quarter. And then we'll wait and see what, if anything, in terms of Trump's policies are having an impact on the economy. It's clear to me that the fact that he got elected has boost confidence, both of investors and the consumers. But you need to see that followed up. I always say be very, very careful. Separate what's happening on Wall Street or in the investment arena from what's happening, I call it the real world, Main Street. Yeah, they're linkages, but I'm more concerned, and you should be more concerned, is what's happening in the economy, not the fact that the stock market is up or down. As far as I'm concerned, get out, because I think it's way overvalued. And that's free advice, and that's what it's worth. It's free. Nothing. It's absolutely worth nothing. Because the average American, oh yes, he has a 401k, and he's been creamed several times, and he may or may not got back in the market. The average American is concerned about his paycheck and whether it's going up and whether he's going to have a job tomorrow. And that's why they came out for Trump, because they didn't believe the Democratic Party, its candidate, or its past president had the eye on the ball. Because if they did, they wouldn't have a stagnating economy for 8 years. And that's exactly what we got. It was pathetic. The only saving grace is we haven't gone into a recession yet. We're long overdue, but look what they had to do to keep us out of a recession, especially the Federal Reserve, a near zero interest rate policy. For years, it failed. It failed. That's my final judgment. And now President Trump says I might keep Fed Chairman Janet Yellen on. Please don't. I know she's a nice lady, but the Federal Reserve has been a disaster. I think you need a broom and just sweep them all out. Start again. Now, you can't do that, but their economic policies are financial repression, and they have screwed the American saver. Remember, they look out for the banks and the federal government. They don't care about the American saver, and that's why you've been getting hardly any interest. The so-called near zero bound, or zero ZERP. So we're going to have some economic news Friday, and I'll definitely cover that. Now, Wednesday, we had 100 senators. I know they didn't all show up, but a lot of them did, over 90. Got on buses from the Capitol, drove over to the White House, really the executive office building, the building right next to it, and heard a briefing by the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of State, and the Joint Chiefs, but the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, about what? North Korea. Now, given the buildup, this is unprecedented, folks. This does not happen. As a matter of fact, I can't think of a previous occasion when it has happened. So I'm sure the senators, when they got on the bus, said, you know, I wonder what he's going to do. Is he going to launch a military attack against North Korea? I was saying to myself, I sure hope he doesn't. That's a no-win situation. And let me remind the president and remind Congress, the American people are not looking for another war. And if you start another war, they will throw you out on the next election. And then in 4 years, they'll throw out of office President Trump. Just so my new listeners understand something, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican. I think both parties are big government parties. Government spending is out of control. They're not telling you the truth as to what's going on. They don't know how to get us out of this mess. And that's part of the problem. I have a plan. I'll tell you the details once I get in. That doesn't cut it with me. I've heard that from several candidates and presidents. Elect me and I will solve the United States problems. And then they fall flat on their face. No, thank you. I have no great expectations that the Trump administration, I hope, is going to be better than Barack Obama. I truly hope that, because I underestimated how bad the Obama administration was. It was bad, both domestically and foreign policy. And hopefully, if Donald Trump can totally eliminate Barack Obama's legacy, and there are two big parts to it. I could add a third, but the biggest one is obviously repeal and replace Obamacare. They haven't done it, and maybe next week they'll have it. Who knows? And remember, it's the House is the first step. It has to go to the Senate, and then the Senate and the House got to get together and draft common language to have a bill and to put on the president's desk. Don't expect any Democratic Party help, and please don't say we have to reach across the aisle. I want to defeat the Democratic Party, not shake their hand. Let me say that again. I want to defeat them, not shake their hand. And I'm not a Republican. They have royally screwed up this country in 8 years, and Barack Obama has severely damaged the Democratic Party. Good. But if President Trump doesn't watch out, he'll do the same thing to the Republican Party. He doesn't have a party, really, and he better understand that. The establishment in Washington, which is primarily the leadership of both parties, they never wanted Donald Trump. The only person they definitely wanted less was Senator Ted Cruz. And remember that. And he was a conservative and more or less for limited government, as am I. I'm a classical liberal looking for limited government. And that's my first test. Does the candidate share my political philosophy? So the senators got on the bus for a short drive, pulled up to the executive office building. right next to the White House. Got out, went into an auditorium, and I think we blinked because I think they were expecting some big news. No, not really. What I'm calling it is strategic patience 2.0. Now, it doesn't surprise me. And let me be very, very clear here. I gave a show, I think Monday or Tuesday, on the situation in South and North Korea militarily. There are no good options here. No good options in terms of military options. There are no good military options. You know, short of a full-out nuclear war, and that's not a good option because if you tried it, China would probably launch on us. So that you can forget about that option. Because the moment the United States strikes at North Korea, and that would be a mistake. To do it unilaterally will be a mistake. I'm not saying you can't. I outlined what you would have to do. You need to take out the command and control systems, the radars, their runways, their aircraft, and simultaneously bomb what your major target is, which is what? Their missile as well as nuclear research and development facilities. But you see, the moment you do that, what's going to happen? North Korea is going to start a conventional war with South Korea. And they have a lot of artillery that they will fire on the city of Seoul. The brunt of any response from North Korea will be South Korea. I mean, Seoul will be leveled. So South Korea doesn't want that. They don't want a war. Japan does not want a war. Let me repeat it. South Korea doesn't want a war. Japan doesn't want a war. The American people don't want a war. And if Trump makes the mistake, a military mistake, and listens to his generals, they give him options. They will follow the orders of the president. So whatever President Trump's orders, you better believe it will be carried through. And Donald Trump, unlike Richard Nixon, doesn't drink, doesn't do drugs. There are no good, rational military options. It's very easy to talk tough. Very easy. And try to rattle. I call it rattling cages. I used to be a negotiator too. Rattle the opponent's cages. Whoever you're trying to negotiate with. Rattle their cages. Gets their attention. But what do you do next? Now, President Trump wisely says, I'm not going to telegraph what I'm going to do. Very smart. No red lines. Very smart. But what has happened over the last week? We've had a lot of rhetoric, rattling cages, by the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, and the President. But what is the dictator, North Korea, Kim Jong-un? Now, I don't think he's crazy, and I'm pleased to learn that neither does the Trump administration. He's a rational actor. That's the jargon. That doesn't mean he's not evil. It doesn't mean he's not a killer, but he's not suicidal. And I can't say that about several other regimes, especially the Iranian one. But you need to qualify that. They're not all nuts. They're not all religious fanatics. Some of them are, but many of them are not. I say he's a rational actor. He doesn't want to commit suicide. Now, he was threatening to launch a nuclear attack on the United States. It's just talk, folks. It's talk. Talk, talk, talk. Bluster, bluster, bluster. It's empty threats on both parties. We know it, they know it. The mistake is who fires first, where it's perceived by public opinion, world opinion, who fired first. And it's very, very dangerous because sometimes you want to get the impression that the enemy fired first and they didn't, a so-called false flag. You want a pretext to go to war, and that's what makes it dangerous here. Who are the two major allies of North Korea? Communist China and Russia. Now, I know right now Communist China is rather cool to North Korea. And there's been some speculation, and I've passed it on, that maybe the Communist Chinese are going for a regime change. They have someone picked, actually a group picked, to overthrow this dictator. That is a very risky move. Because if you're going to kill the king, you better make sure he doesn't get up. And you can kill someone, but he has supporters, and they're tied to him. And they will resist any coup d'etat overthrow of the dictator. And I think the Communist Chinese are also rational actors. They have been allies, as has Russia, with North Korea. They don't want a war with North Korea, but they definitely do not want the United States and South Korea on their borders. So if push comes to shove and we go to a hot war, a major escalation, whose side do you think China is going to be on? I don't think it's the United States. Communist China does not want a flood of North Korean refugees into China. But they don't want the South Koreans on their border, allied with the United States. And they won't stand for that. And that's what you need to understand. I'm repeating some of what I said in that show because I want to make very clear, I'm beginning to believe that the administration has finally woken up to the fact there are absolutely no good military options. Oh, I know some of you are thinking, well, we just send a destroyer over there, launch, another 59 cruise missiles, and then we'll go home. Well, we might go home, but what is going to be the response of North Korea? I think they would attack South Korea. And then we have a world war on our hands, a repeat of the Korean War. Do the American people want that? Mr. Trump, they don't. And you ran as a non-interventionist. You've been rattling cages, rattling sabers. And now what? Okay, you didn't draw a red line, but all this saber rattling, sending an armada of naval ships, that's all well and good. Having military exercises, that's fine. Send the vice president over there, that's fine. I'm sure he wanted to get back real quick, though. And yes, consulting with Japan and South Korea, good idea there. I'm sure they told you, we don't want a war here. We know we got a nut, a rational nut, but a nut job. How are you going to handle them? And remember, what have we tried? We tried sticks, hasn't worked. Carrots, hasn't worked. That's what the State Department jargon. You give them incentives, those are in carrots. And sticks is like sanctions. We're going to sanction them. And that's where they're going right now. They finally figured out. I think the military knew it from the get-go and had to tell the president, we got plenty of options, but this, all our plans will be thrown out the window within the first 48 hours. And then you have, as Donald Trump said, a major conflict. You better believe we'll have a major conflict. Now, why all the concern? Why now? What are the North Koreans doing that have President Trump talking a lot, issuing orders a lot, sending ships to the Far East, an aircraft carrier group? Remember, we have troops there and Air Force fighters there. It's more or less a trip line. So if North Korea does attack South Korea, U.S. is committed. Our ally is South Korea, as is its Japan, and they're expecting, really they're demanding, that the United States would have to step up to the plate. I'm no fan of the North Korean dictator's regime. It's probably the worst totalitarian regime I've seen. And what makes them dangerous, in case you don't know this, they already have nuclear weapons. Now, why did they secretly do that? And it's a very rational strategy. They calculated if they had, truly had nuclear weapons that can be carried on bombers, that would keep the United States government from intervening in their country. In other words, invading their country. It's very much the strategy of the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's what they want to do. They want nuclear weapons to keep the United States out. And it's hard to argue that, because the danger is, if you do intervene, they'll use them, either on American soldiers or their opposition or allies. It's their leverage. It's their ace in the hole. You don't need many of them, because if only one goes off, the war immediately escalates. Remember, we haven't had a nuclear weapon dropped or used since we used them over Japan in 1945, twice. We have avoided nuclear war, largely because the people that have the nuclear weapons are rational actors. That's very key. They're not insane or crazy. They don't want to commit suicide. And they know if they truly did launch nuclear weapons against either South Korea, Japan, or the United States, their life expectancy would be reduced to hours. They would be wiped off the map. So it's clearly not in their interest at all to start a war, at all. That's why we've had a truce. That's more or less held. Doesn't mean they haven't tested us. Doesn't mean they're not shooting off artillery pieces and have jets sweeping over the beaches. Have you seen the videos? Take a peek. And for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. This is show 882. And under the links to the most recent 60 to 80 shows, you'll have a number of videos pertaining to the two stories I'm covering, namely North Korea and Trump's first 100 days. What did he accomplish? So what does the United States want? Well, Rex Tillerson was interviewed by Brett Baer, and he made it very clear. Let me first say, what we don't want is regime change. We're not trying to out or ouster the North Korea dictator. And that's important to say that. But they want North Korea to stop nuclear testing. They also want North Korea to stop ballistic missile testing, specifically intercontinental ballistic missiles, solid-state missiles that have a long range. Now, note, I said that. I didn't say all missile testing, because they're testing various types of missiles with various types of ranges. What the United States is concerned about is a missile that could hit Alaska, Hawaii, and the West Coast. Now, what you need to understand about nuclear testing and testing of long-range missiles, you have to do a lot of both. And every couple of weeks or months, depending on what type of test it is, you test and test. There are different components that you have to test. And guess what? Many of them fail. They blow up. But that's why you do the test. What went wrong? And you got to figure out what went wrong. So it takes many years. Even though there are nuclear weapons out there and missiles out there, unless you steal them, if you're starting not so much from scratch, but trying to perfect a long-range missile and trying to downsize or miniaturize a nuclear warhead, you got to do a lot of testing, underground, above ground. And remember, they launched, didn't go very far, they launched a solid-state, and that's the key, missile also from a submarine. And it's even more dangerous. So the fear and the threat of North Korea to the United States, forget about Japan and South Korea for a minute, the United States does not want North Korea to miniaturize a nuclear warhead that could be fitted upon a long-range ballistic missile, an intercontinental ballistic missile, a solid-state missile. So they want them to cease and desist doing that. And why do we like to say, well, all options are on the table? Have you heard that one? All options are on the table. Time for a reality check. Oh, they can be on the table, but you better not reach for about half of them. Nice plans, nice details. I'm sure you revise them. But what's the takeaway? What's the bottom line? Well, Mr. President, if you do option A, B, C, D, E, we're either in a nuclear war or in a conventional war. And what's the estimated casualties? Hundreds of thousands of people, probably millions, on both sides. Well, what do you recommend, General? I recommend that we don't do the military options. That's the right answer. But we have them, Mr. President. It's up to you. You're commander-in-chief. Tell us what to do. Please don't do the military option. Yeah, we can send ships, submarines, jet fighters, bombers, and get our allies involved and have exercises. We don't want a war. The American people don't want a war. I think the military doesn't want a war. It's a long way from here to North Korea, and I know we have a lot of Marines, Navy, and Air Force in Japan on Okinawa, not too far from North Korea. But they're not enough. North Korea has hundreds of thousands of well-trained soldiers, over a million. They have reserves, and a lot of those soldiers are special forces, deadly special forces. And they have artillery in the mountains, rugged terrain, zeroed in on various parts of Seoul. So no matter how successful an air strike would be, I think it's almost inevitable that Seoul will be severely damaged. And we're back into a Korean War that no one wants. I don't think China wants it. I don't think North Korea wants it, South Korea, Japan, or the United States. It has echoes of World War One. No one wanted World War One, but suddenly it happened because of the connections, the alliances. And you always have to factor in accidents happen. You better believe accidents happen. And you can throw out your war plans within hours of launch because something that you didn't think of happens. We only have diplomatic options. We've tried ignoring them. We've tried carrots and sticks. Carrots are incentives. Give them stuff. Sticks are sanctions. Now, where are we headed? To the United Nations to really tighten up those sanctions. And we're trying to get China to make the North Korean regime back off on the nuclear testing. What do you need to do? And I've been asking myself, what would you do? I think there needs to be a meeting between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un. Where? Probably China. But that needs to be worked out. And the key question that Donald Trump needs to say is this. Sir, we want you to stop nuclear testing. And we want you to stop testing long-range intercontinental missiles. That's what we want. What do you want? And shut up and let them tell you. Don't put words in their mouths. Now, the initial reaction is, well, sorry. Well, I know you're the president of the United States, but we're a sovereign country, and we believe that nuclear weapons are our way to guarantee that you don't invade us. Donald Trump prides himself in being a terrific negotiator. Well, I think he's going to need to earn his pay. Now, normally, you shouldn't have the leaders do these negotiations. It's your subordinates, your Secretary of State, and really under him as well. Professional negotiators, preferably that speak the language. Good luck with that. And you got to think, what are you prepared to offer him? And make very sure, don't repeat the so-called U.S.-Iranian nuclear agreement that should have been a treaty, because that one needs to be ripped up and thrown in the trash. I'm sure that President Trump would offer him quite a lot, provided it's rather, let us say, airtight that they have to truly shut down their nuclear testing. And that means access, U.S. access to their testing sites to make sure that they can't start them up. Because they haven't been negotiating in good faith in the past. And usually if that's the case, I say you don't negotiate with them. That's the standard response, and it should be. If someone doesn't live up to his deal, don't do business with him. Well, we apparently need to do business with him. So you grin and bear it, but whatever you do, you make sure ahead of time there's no way they can cheat at all. In other words, they do what they promise this time. Can we get there from here? I don't know. You got to try. What I'm laying out is a diplomatic solution, but diplomacy has failed with this country. We tried to provide incentives. Aid didn't work. They broke the promise. They went ahead and developed their nuclear weapons. We tried sanctions. Sanctions almost never work unless they're airtight. And there's always countries that will cheat and will deal with the nation you're sanctioning. And they take time. It takes time. It has to be universal. Most, if not all, all nations have to be on our side. And that's the problem. A lot of nations aren't on our side. So, yeah, we can go to the United Nations and we'll go to the United Nations and request that sanctions truly be enforced. And maybe the nations of the world will go along with us and maybe they won't. And it's still taking a lot of time. And when time is of the essence, what's happening? They're testing the missiles. And at some point, they'll test the nuclear weapons. And then what is President Trump going to do? They've called his bluff. Keep in mind, it's a sovereign nation. I know they're a pariah. They're part of the axis of evil. They are a terrible totalitarian regime. I wish they would be overthrown. I truly do. They have hundreds of thousands of people in prison. Where do we stand? I don't know where we're going to go. I really don't know where we're going to go. Stay tuned. I don't think talk is getting as much in the sense of threatening each another, sending military forces out there, having exercises, firing weapons off. Both sides have been doing it, primarily the North Koreans. I understand that. It's a small nation. We're a large nation, although we have overextended ourselves, and we are very much an American empire that's trying to be policeman of the world. And we have allies, Japan and South Korea, that are getting concerned. No one wants war. Understand that. I truly believe none of the parties involved want war. You don't even want to think about it, because millions of people truly innocent, and many of them innocent, will be killed in North Korea, South Korea, maybe Japan and China, and possibly Russia. I don't even want to contemplate that. But talk to the people that know North Korea and South Korea, and they're not many. But there's some. There are no good options. And when there are no good options, you have to be doubly careful. It's a very dangerous situation. Snap decisions is not what's called for. Decisive action is not what's called for. You got to think out every move, and you're still going to miss something. And that something can escalate. So what's going to happen? We'll go to the United Nations. We may or may not get more vigorous sanctions, and then wait. And what will North Korea do? It might back down. It might actually listen to the communist Chinese. Remember, North Korea's back to the wall. They're a basket case. They rely on aid and trade with primarily communist China. There's a 900-mile border between communist China in the north and south of that, North Korea. And a small portion is with Russia. Those are the two parties, I think, on the other side that have the most to lose. American people don't want war with Russia. The American people don't want war with communist China. And the truth be known, I don't think either of those countries want war with us. And the same goes for South Korea and Japan. So the joker here is North Korea. It has to be handled diplomatically. It's going to be a very sensitive negotiation. And a misstep has consequences, and maybe military consequences. So I think we're back to what I call strategic patience 2.0, because when the senators were briefed, someone blinked. Who blinked? The United States did. Because the bottom line was, we got to talk. We got to talk. Diplomacy. Good luck. We've tried it. There's a phrase, and I put it in the title right after Strategic Patience 2.0. Tightening economic sanctions and pursuing diplomatic measures with our allies. That's why I called it Strategic Patience 2.0. Now, Vice President Pence, Donald Trump, various officials in the administration, the era of strategic patience is over. Okay. I never liked strategic patience, by the way. I think the proper identifier for that is appeasement. And appeasement never works. Never works. Maybe there's an exception, but it eventually leads to war. So all the senators got in their bus, went over to the White House, and the bottom line was, we're going to tighten economic sanctions and pursue diplomatic measures with our allies and regional partners. Well, that was what President Barack Obama was doing. Actually, he was ignoring the problem, but that's what the United States has been doing in several administrations, Clinton's, Bush's, and Barack Obama's. What's new here? And I'm sure a lot of those senators, their eyes rolled. Oh, I came all the way here and you're telling me we're going to pursue diplomacy and sanctions? Nothing wrong with that, but economic sanctions take forever, if they ever work. And we've been pursuing diplomatic measures with our allies and partners. We talk to them all the time. They're not happy with the situation. So if you can't cut a deal and it's truly a threat, not only to the United States, but to Japan, South Korea, communist China, Russia, what's left? Like I said, there are no good options. War? The American people want to stay out of this. And I think it's truly communist China's problem. And let me say that again. It's communist China's problem. And to a certain extent, Russia. You created the monster. You either rein him in so you're satisfied that he stops nuclear testing, stops developing long-range missiles, and do what it takes. You have the leverage with them. The United States doesn't have leverage with them. For the simple reason, we're back to man, mutually assured destruction. He knows that if he launches anything against the United States or South Korea, it's over. It's over for him, his army, his generals, and his people. That's why it's important to first determine, is this person rational as opposed to being suicidal? The conclusion is he's rational. I'm going to move on to what is Trump's real accomplishments so far. Now, I agree with Trump, and he's downplaying this. And if I were him, I would downplay it too. 100 days is just an arbitrary period. If you ask me what the public probably could identify as his key accomplishment was the fact that he appointed a Supreme Court justice that got confirmed by the Republican Senate, Neil Gorsuch. I always mispronounce his name, Neil Gorsuch. The other is he's canceled a lot of the executive orders that Barack Obama put out. Whether you're aware of that is not critical, but in my mind, that is his accomplishment. See, executive orders are what? Orders to the secretaries, the departments, the agencies to do certain things. They're like, they're memos. In my mind, they're memos telling what you want to accomplish. They're orders. That's the start of something. That's not results. That's the start. I know they had all these photo ops either in the Oval Office or in the various departments or at even off-site. I think they signed one of them. And there have been, I think, 30. I keep losing track. And that's one way to manipulate the media and get coverage, especially to, you'll be one of the stories on the news when, and that's what President Trump was doing. He's a master manipulator of what? The media. And he's taken on the media. And he gave, I will say this, he gave a great speech, first speech to Congress. Surprised almost everybody. Didn't surprise me, but he's very good. He's getting a lot better. And initially, I didn't think he could do it, but he did. He can read from teleprompters now. That doesn't make you a great orator. That just makes you a great reader of scripts on the teleprompter. And someone else writes the speeches. He doesn't write the speech. He reads the speech. He has speech writers that prepare the speech. Oh, he has input as to what he wants to emphasize. I, at one time, did write some speeches when I was in working from the number one at the time, aerospace company. But that's neither here nor there. Because executives don't have time to write their speeches, and many of them are just simply not good writers. You got to be good writers, and you have to speak with the voice of who you're writing for. You need to know their style. But when it's a formal occasion, and you got to make sure you cover the key points, you don't do it off the cuff. I could try to do it off the cuff, but I would never advise it, especially if you're president of the United States. Donald Trump is fairly good in making speeches without notes, even though he has them, without a teleprompter. Former President Obama was not very good at making spontaneous speeches. He was and got very good at reading speeches that someone else wrote. And so has Donald Trump. That's what's expected. You learn on the job. And if you practice, practice, practice. I don't practice for this show, by the way. I don't have notes in front of me. I just talk. Now, I do prepare, and I have a bunch of ideas in my head, and at the appropriate time, I communicate those ideas. But that's not a formal speech. So his speech to Congress, I thought, was outstanding. I think that surprised big time the Democrats. That put them back on their heels. And I always say, when the Democratic Party, your opposition, and the big lie media that is supporting them is digging a hole, let them keep digging. Stick to your agenda, your message. And he largely has done that. So in my mind, his major accomplishment was replacing Anton Scalia with a younger, very impressive justice that probably will be on the court many, many years, probably decades, 25, 35 years. Very, very impressive. So that's a win. But who does that impress? Attorneys, constitutional lawyers, people in Congress, people in Washington. What about the American people? Most Americans couldn't name one Supreme Court justice. Some could name one or two. Not the new one, even though they've heard the name a couple of times. And they don't know what he stands for. People are concerned with their lives. And how are you going to impact their lives? That means they're concerned about keeping their jobs or getting a job. They're concerned about a growing economy. They're concerned about taxes, and they pay attention to that. What they don't want is to send their sons and daughters to wars in foreign places. And they certainly don't want Korean War number two. And our president should remember that. Don't get caught up in your own rhetoric. I don't know how dangerous the threat is from North Korea. I'm surprised, quite frankly, how suddenly this entire exercise has been ramped up. Maybe we got some intelligence that we didn't have before. I agree there is a legitimate concern here. We don't want them to miniaturize nuclear weapons and then put them on long-range missiles. That has to stop. We have to put our foot down. The question is how you get there. And if he could make that an accomplishment, he'll have a successful presidency. But we're way far away from that. Oh, it's easy to issue orders. And it goes down the chain of command, and we fire cruise missiles at Syria. Please don't do that with North Korea, because they will launch an artillery attack on Seoul. And then that's war. So was the attack on Syria was war. It was an act of war. I wish both of those regimes were replaced. But wishing is one thing. Coulda, woulda, shoulda doesn't count. Results count. Good intentions don't count. Results count. Being able to manipulate the media, why a convenient and useful skill or talent, that's not results. It's not performance. The American people want performance. And first and foremost, they want the performance of the United States economy turned around and our government downsized. And I don't see Donald Trump doing anything about downsizing the federal government because the political parties, the establishment in Washington, will fight him every single step of the way. But if he doesn't do that and doesn't get Obamacare repealed and replaced, which I think will happen, but he needs a much bolder tax plan. And he keeps changing his mind. Because a lot of people, including me, I don't know what he really wants. I know the general direction he wants to go. I want to reduce the tax burden on lower and middle income people. So do I. And some of what he did yesterday accomplishes that, if it gets passed. But why do we never really see fundamental tax reform? It's because the politicians don't want it. They want to continue to get large campaign contributions from the owner-donor class, the people that run and own this country. They want the status quo to remain the status quo. And if you want to change it, you got to pay for it. And yes, people have paid for the changes what Trump wants as well as what the Republican establishment wants. And they paid the Democrats to resist it. Doesn't matter if it would tremendously benefit the American people. Doesn't matter. That's not what it's about. What it's about is power and keeping power and getting money so they can keep power. Get reelected, reelected, reelected. We have career politicians, and they know how the game is played. Well, looking at the time, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.